Chapter 6. Holden. Holden was dreaming of long, twisting corridors filled with half-human horrors when a loud buzzing woke him to a pitch-black cabin. He struggled for a moment with the unfamiliar straps on the bunk before he unbuckled and floated free in the microgravity. The wall panel buzzed again. Holden pushed off the bed to it and hit the button to bring the cabin lights up. The cabin was tiny. A 70-year-old crash couch above a personal storage locker, crammed up against one bulkhead, a toilet and sink built into a corner, and across from the bunk, a wall panel with the name Somnambulist etched above it. The panel buzzed a third time. This time, Holden hit the reply button and said, "Where are we, Naomi?" "Final braking for high orbit. You're not going to believe this, but they're making us queue up."
"Queue up? As in get in line?"
"Yep," Naomi said. "I think they're boarding all the ships that are landing on Ganymede."
"Shit," he thought.
"Shit, which side is it? Does it matter?"
"Well," Holden said, "Earth wants me for stealing a couple thousand of their nuclear missiles and handing them over to the OPA. Mars just wants me for stealing one of their ships. I assume those carry different penalties."
Naomi laughed. "They'd lock you up for eternity either way."
"Call me pedantic, then."
The group we're in line for look like UN ships, but a Martian frigate is parked right next to them, watching the proceedings. Holden gave a private prayer of thanks for letting Fred Johnson back on Tycho talk him into taking the recently repaired Somnambulist to Ganymede, rather than try to land in the Rocinante. The freighter was the least suspicious ship in the OPA fleet right now. Far less likely to draw unwanted attention than their stolen Martian warship. They'd left the Rossi parked 1,000,000 kilometers away from Jupiter in a spot no one was likely to look. Alex had the ship shut down except for air recycling and passive sensors, and was probably huddled in his cabin with a space heater and a lot of blankets, waiting for their call.
"Okay, I'm on my way up. Send a tight beam to Alex and let him know the situation. If we get arrested, he's to take the Rossi back to Tycho."
Holden opened the locker under the bunk and pulled out a badly fitting green jumpsuit with Somnambulist stenciled on the back and the name Phillips on the front pocket. According to the ship's records, provided by the tech wizards back at Tycho, he was crewman First Class Walter Phillips, engineer and general tool pusher on the food freighter Somnambulist. He was also third in command out of a crew of three. Given his reputation in the solar system, it was thought best that Holden not have a job on the ship that would require him to speak to anyone in authority. He washed up in his tiny sink, no actual free-flowing water but a system of moist towels and soaped pads, scratching unhappily at the scraggly beard he'd been growing as part of his disguise. He'd never tried to grow one before, and was disappointed to discover that his facial hair grew in patches of varying length and curl. Amos had grown a beard as well in an act of solidarity, and now had a lush lion's mane, which he was considering keeping because it looked so good. Holden slid the used towel into its cycling chamber and pushed off toward the compartment hatch and up the crew ladder to the operations deck. Not that it was much of an ops deck. The Somnambulist was nearly 100 years old and definitely at the end of her life cycle. If they hadn't needed a throwaway ship for this mission, Fred's people would probably have just scrapped the old girl out. Her recent run-in with pirates had left her half-dead to begin with. But she'd spent the last 20 years of her life flying the Ganymede to Ceres food run, and she'd show up in the registry as a regular visitor to the Jovian moon, a ship that might plausibly arrive with relief supplies. Fred thought that with her regular arrivals at Ganymede, she might just get waved past any customs or blockades without a look. That, it seemed, had been optimistic. Naomi was belted into one of the operations stations when Holden arrived. She wore a green jumpsuit similar to his, though the name on her pocket read Estancia. She gave him a smile, then waved him over to look at her screen.
That's the group of ships that are checking everyone out before they land.
Damn,
Holden said, zooming the telescopic image in to get a better look at the hulls and identifying marks. Definitely UN ships. Something small moved across the image from one of the UN ships to the heavy freighter that was currently at the front of the line. And that looks like a boarding skiff. Well, good thing you haven't groomed in a month, Naomi said, tugging at a lock of his hair. With that bush on your head and that awful beard, your own mothers wouldn't recognize you. I'm hoping they haven't recruited my mothers, Holden said, trying to match her lightness of tone. I'll warn Amos that they're coming. Holden, Naomi, and Amos waited in the short, locker-filled hallway just outside the inner airlock door for the boarding party to finish cycling the lock. Naomi looked tall and stern in her freshly washed captain's uniform and magnetic boots. Captain Estancia had skippered the Somnambulist for 10 years before the pirate attack that took her life. Holden thought Naomi made a suitably regal replacement. Behind her, Amos wore a jumpsuit with a chief engineer's patch and a bored scowl. Even in the microgravity of their current orbit around Ganymede, he seemed to be slouching. Holden did his best to emulate his stance and his half-angry expression. The airlock finished cycling and the inner doors slid open. 6 Marines in combat armor and a junior lieutenant in an environment suit clanked out on mag boots. The lieutenant quickly looked over the crew and checked them against something on his hand terminal. He looked as bored as Amos did. Holden guessed that this poor junior officer had been stuck with the shit duty of boarding ships all day, and was probably in as big a hurry to be done as they were to leave. Rowena Estancia, captain and majority owner of the series registered freighter Weeping Somnambulist. He didn't make it a question, but Naomi replied, "Yes, sir." "I like the name," the lieutenant said without looking up from his terminal. "Sir?" "The ship name. It's unusual. I swear if I board one more ship named after someone's kid or the girl they left behind after that magical weekend on Titan, I'm going to start fining people for general lack of creativity." Holden felt a tension begin at the base of his spine and creep up toward his scalp. This lieutenant might be bored with his job, but he was smart and perceptive, and he was letting them know it up front. "Well, this one is named after the tearful 3 months I spent on Titan after he left me," Naomi said with a grin. "Probably a good thing in the long term. I was going to name her after my goldfish." The lieutenant's head snapped up in surprise. Then he began laughing. "Thanks, Captain. That's the first laugh today. Everyone else is scared shitless of us. And these 6 slabs of meat," he gestured at the Marines behind him, "have had their senses of humor chemically removed." Holden shot a look to Amos. "Is he flirting with her?" "I think he's flirting with her." Amos's scowl could have meant anything. The lieutenant tapped something on his terminal and said, "Protein supplements, water purifiers, and antibiotics. Can I take a quick look?" "Yes, sir," Naomi said, gesturing toward the hatch. "Right this way." She left, the UN officer and 2 of the Marines in tow. The other 4 settled into alert guard poses next to the airlock. Amos elbowed Holden to get his attention, then said, "How you boys doing today?" The Marines ignored him. "I was saying to my buddy here, I was saying, I bet those fancy tin suits those boys wear bind up something awful in the crotch." Holden closed his eyes and started sending psychic messages to Amos to shut up. It didn't work. "I mean, all that fancy high-tech gear strapped on everywhere, and the one thing they don't allow for is scratching your balls. Or, God forbid, you get out of alignment and gotta give the works a shift to create some space." Holden opened his eyes. The Marines were all looking at Amos now, but they hadn't moved or spoken. Holden shifted to the back corner of the room and tried to press himself into it. No one even glanced in his direction. "So," Amos continued, his voice full of companionable good cheer, I got this theory, and I was hoping you boys could help me out. The closest Marine took a half step forward, but that was all. My theory is, Amos said, that to avoid that whole problem, they just go ahead and cut off all those parts that might get caught up in your suit. And it has the added benefit of reducing your temptation to diddle each other during those long cold nights on the ship. The Marine took another step, and Amos immediately took one of his own to close the distance. With his nose so close to the Marine's armored faceplate that his breath fogged the glass, Amos said, "So, be straight with me, Joe. The outside of those suits, that's anatomically correct, ain't it?" There was a long, tense silence that was finally broken when someone cleared his throat at the hatch and the lieutenant came into the corridor. "There a problem here?" Amos smiled and stepped back. "Nope. Just getting to know the fine men and women my tax dollars help pay for." "Sergeant?" the lieutenant said. The Marine stepped back. "No, sir. No problem." The lieutenant turned around and shook Naomi's hand. "Captain Estancia, it's been a pleasure. Our people will be radioing you with landing clearance shortly. I'm sure the people of Ganymede will be grateful for the supplies you're bringing." "Happy to help," Naomi said, and gave the young officer a brilliant smile. When the UN troops had cycled back through the airlock and flown away in their skiff, Naomi let out a long breath and began massaging her cheeks. If I had to smile 1 second longer, my face was going to crack apart. Holden grabbed Amos by the sleeve. "What the fuck?" he said through gritted teeth. "Was that all about?" "What?" Naomi said. "Amos here did just about everything he could to piss the Marines off while you were gone. I'm surprised they didn't shoot him, and then me half a second later." Amos glanced down at Holden's hand, still gripping his arm, but made no move to pull free. "Cap, you're a good guy, but you'd be a shitty smuggler." "What?" Naomi said again. "The captain here was so nervous even I started to think he was up to something. So I kept the Marines' attention until you got back," Amos said. "Oh, and they can't shoot you unless you actually touch them or draw a weapon. You were a UN Navy boy, you should remember the rules." "So," Holden started. "So," Amos interrupted, "if the lieutenant asks them about us, they'll have a story to tell about the asshole engineer who got in their faces and not the nervous guy with a patchy beard who kept trying to hide in the corner." "Shit," Holden said. "You're a good captain, and you can have my back in a fight any time, but you're a crap criminal. You just don't know how to act like anyone but yourself." "Want to be captain again?" Naomi said. "That job sucks." "Ganymede Tower, this is Somnambulist repeating our request for a pad assignment," Naomi said. "We've been cleared by the UN patrols, and you've had us holding in low orbit for 3 hours now." Naomi flicked off her mic and added, "Asshole." The voice that replied was different from the one they'd been requesting landing clearance from for the last few hours. This one was older and less annoyed. "Sorry, Somnambulist, we'll get you into the pattern as soon as possible. But we've had launches non-stop for the last 10 hours, and we still have a dozen ships to get off the ground before we start letting people land." Holden turned on his mic and said, "We talking to the supervisor now?" "Yep, Senior Supervisor Sam Snelling, if you're making notes for a complaint. That's Snelling with 2 L's. No, Holden replied, "not a complaint. We've been watching the outgoing ships flying by. Are these refugee ships? With the tonnage we've seen lifting off, it looks like half the moon is leaving." "Nope, we do have a few charters and commercial liners taking people off, but most of the ships leaving right now are food freighters." "Food freighters? We ship almost 100,000 kilos of food a day, and the fighting trapped a lot of those shipments on the surface. Now that the blockade is letting people through, they're on their way out to make their deliveries." "Wait," Holden said. "I'm waiting to land with relief food supplies for people starving on Ganymede, and you're launching 100,000 kilos of food off the moon?" "Closer to 500,000, what with the backup," Sam said. But we don't own this food. Most of the food production on Ganymede is owned by corporations that aren't headquartered here. A lot of money tied up in these shipments. Every day it sat on the ground here, people were losing a fortune. Holden started. Then, after a pause, said, Somnambulist out. Holden turned his chair around to face Naomi. Her expression was closed, in a way that meant she was as angry as he was. Amos, lounging near the engineering console and eating an apple he'd stolen from their relief supply, said, This surprises you, why, Captain? An hour later, they got permission to land. Seen from low orbit and their descent path, the surface of Ganymede didn't look much different than it ever had. Even at its best, the Jovian moon was a wasteland of gray silicate rock and slightly less gray water ice, the entire thing pocked with craters and flash-frozen lakes. It had looked like a battlefield long before humanity's ancestors crawled up onto dry land for the first time. But humans, with their great creativity and industriousness in the domain of destruction, had found ways to make their mark. Holden spotted the almost skeletal remains of a destroyer stretched across the landscape at the end of a long, black scar. The shockwave of its impact had flattened smaller domes as far as 10 kilometers away. Tiny rescue ships flitted about its corpse, looking less for survivors than for bits of information or technology that had survived the crash and couldn't be allowed to fall into enemies' hands. The worst damage visible was the complete loss of one of the enormous greenhouse domes. The agricultural domes were gigantic structures of steel and glass, with hectares of carefully cultivated soil and meticulously bred and tended crops beneath them. To see one crushed beneath the twisted metal of what looked like a fallen mirror array was shocking and demoralizing. The domes fed the outer planets with their specially bred crops. The most advanced agricultural science in history happened inside them. And the orbiting mirrors were marvels of engineering that helped make it possible. Slamming one into the other and leaving both lying in ruins struck Holden as being as stupidly short-sighted as shitting in your water supply to deny your enemy a drink. By the time the somnambulist had set her creaking bones to rest on their assigned landing pad, Holden had lost all patience with human stupidity. So, of course, it came out to meet him. The customs inspector was waiting for them when they stepped out of the airlock. He was a stick-thin man with a handsome face and an egg-shaped bald head. He was accompanied by two men in nondescript security guard uniforms with tasers and holsters at their belts. Hello, my name is Mr. Vedas. I am the customs inspector for Port 11, pads A-14 through A-22. Your manifest, please. Naomi, once again playing captain, stepped forward and said, The manifest was transmitted to your office prior to landing. Holden saw that Vedas wasn't holding an official cargo inspection terminal, nor were the guards with him wearing Ganymede Port Authority uniforms. He got the tingling premonition of a bad con job about to be played out. He moved up and waved Naomi off. Captain, I'll take care of this. Customs Inspector Vedas looked him up and down and said, And you are? You can call me Mr. Not Putting Up With Your Bullshit. Vedas scowled, and the two security guards shuffled closer. Holden smiled at them, then reached behind his back and under his coat and pulled out a large pistol. He held it at the side of his leg, pointed at the ground, but they stepped back anyway. Vedas blanched. I know this shakedown, Holden said. You ask to look at our manifest, then you tell us which items we have mistakenly included on it. And while we are retransmitting to your office with our newly amended manifest, you and your goons take the plum items and sell them on what I'm guessing is a thriving black market for food and medicine. I am a legally vested administrator of Ganymede Station, Vedas squeaked. You think you can bully me with your gun? I'll have port security arrest you and impound your entire ship if you think... No, I'm not going to bully you, Holden said. But I have had it right up to here with idiots profiting from misery. And I'm going to make myself feel better by having my big friend Amos here beat you senseless for trying to steal food and medicine from refugees. Ain't bullying so much as stress relief, Amos said amiably. Holden nodded at Amos. How angry does it make you that this guy wants to steal from refugees, Amos? Pretty fucking angry, Captain. Holden patted his pistol against his thigh. The gun is just to make sure port security there doesn't interfere until Amos has fully worked out his anger issues. Mr. Vedas, customs inspector for Port 11, pads A-14 through A-22, turned and ran as though his life depended on it, with his rent-a-cops in hot pursuit. You enjoyed that, Naomi said. Her expression was odd and evaluating, her voice in the no-man's land between accusing and not. Holden holstered his gun. Let's go find out what the hell happened here.